Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another exciting installment of the Dual Screens Podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and joining us this week is Dennis Zinna, the creator of Monster Sanctuary, a monster taming meets Metroidvania pixelated adventure. Dennis, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. This is actually fun because your game literally just came out like a few days ago.
Yes, exactly.
That is insane. Well, we'll get into that in a little while. But for those who are new to the show, this is the Dual Screens Podcast. This is the world's number one indie developer interview podcast, probably. And everyone who has a story to tell, be it a game developer, an artist, a publisher, a voice actor, this is their platform to do so. All right, so Dennis, let's just dive right in here into your game. So you have been working for quite a while in the gaming industry. You've been working on games like Tropico and Might and Magic. You had a very successful Kickstarter campaign for Monster Sanctuary. And I have to ask you, are you playing Cyberpunk yet?
No, I'm not playing it yet. I watched a bit of footage, but yeah, I'm kind of interested, but not too much. Mm-hmm. Actually, probably I would rather play Witcher first because I'm more into fantasy.
Right.
But yeah, it's a game that takes like a lot of time. So maybe I'll find some time to play it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you're going to find a lot of time for that game. Did you get any cold feet? Like, just a quick tangent here. Did you say, like, fuck it, we'll launch alongside Cyberpunk. Who cares? My game has less bugs. We're totally fine.
Yeah, that was not quite the way it was because we had our launch date before they moved to the 10th of December. Mm-hmm. So it was like, oh, fuck, they moved to 10th. I mean, a lot of other games like that were near this date actually postponed their dates in response. But yeah, we thought, okay, we will stick to our promised release date and hope it will work out.
Well,
it was scary.
Different. Yeah, I think you guys, like, you stood your ground. Like, you know, we had a promise to our fans and we're going to stick to this date. And I think it's been very successful. I've seen like reviews pouring in on Steam. There's like just mass praise for this game. What's it been like for you seeing all that positive feedback now that the game is out there, like in the wild?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely happy about the feedback. Like overall, it's very positive. And I think I always feel like the indie developers have some kind of bonus that the people are less critical looking at the games. Like, for sure, the visuals and stuff is not like on the top professional level, but people still give like awesome scores on Steam and etc. So I think they are like more forgiving in the feedback.
Right. Yeah. So I have also yet to start playing Cyberpunk. I'm kind of waiting until the game is actually playable. You know, all the bugs are squashed and it's in a more polished state. And I've been playing games like yours, which I am currently obsessed with. I'm loving it. And I've talked about it several times on the podcast, and I've always told our listeners, if they were to shut their eyes and imagine what a Metroidvania meets Pokemon would look like as a game, it would be exactly what they think it would look like. So I want you to describe for us, what is Monster Sanctuary?
Yeah, it's basically what you said. It's like a mixture of monster taming RPG, but the exploration is not top-down like it is usually in the Pokemon games and other monster taming games, but the exploration is like in a platformer or a Metroidvania from the side. Mm-hmm. And but you still have the turn-based combat of the RPGs. So that's basically the mixture.
Where did the idea come from to marry these two genres? Because, you know, when I first started playing, you have a feeling to like, okay, when can I start slashing enemies to pieces? But that's not at all. There's no like attack button. It's like you just basically, you run into an enemy, you encounter, then it goes into a little battle sequence, like a turn-based yes. battle. So how did you come up with this particular combination of gameplay styles?
I think most people would think that it was like, okay, let's combine these two genres. But actually the main idea was that I wanted to make a monster taming RPG, but I didn't want to do it in the top-down perspective. So, because back then when I started the project, it started out as a hobby project, and I wanted to do everything myself, actually, like programming, pixel art, music. I was inspired by games like Stardew Valley or mm-hmm. Axiom Verge, who were done by Zola devs mm-hmm. and who became like really successful despite being done only by one person.
Correct.
This was what inspired me back then to do one myself, even if it would not become this successful. The main goal was just to make, I was thinking I could do a game all on my own. Mm-hmm. So
it's very ambitious, by the way.
Yeah. And one point was that my idea was, if I do the exploration in a side view perspective, it would require me to do less pixel art, because I would need to do the character sprites, the monster sprites, only from one side. Mm-hmm. Because if you do it top down, you have to render to make it that he can view up, down, left, right.
Right, a lot more perspective to consider.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that way I thought, okay, this might be manageable to do it on my own. And it was only later that I realized how unique of idea this was.
Yeah, it's funny how you describe it. It sounds like your initial idea was, if I'm going to do this as a one-man developer team,
yes,
I'll do as little work as I don't want to make it too stressful for myself. I can minimize the scope. I'll do a side-scrolling game so it's less artistic like work and make it like well-polished. And then as you develop it, it's like, I have a really good idea here. It's actually fresh and new to the genre. And I think that's why I got such a huge response. Like when it first launched on Kickstarter, it was huge. Like it got a huge response. You got like more than what you asked for. And because you're actually trying to innovate, because you could have done this game if you took your time as a traditional top-down Pokemon, Digimon type monster taming game with sprite work, would have looked gorgeous. But I think that this Metroidvania approach to the genre, the side-scrolling feel, it's new and it's unheard of, and that's the hook, and that's why I'm so obsessed with it. I love it so much.
Yeah, that was basically it. Yeah, I mean, it was also a bit scary, like you are uncertain, will this actually work out, because there were always the concern that this turn-based combat would be too interruptive to the action, more action-packed exploration, but that you have like running around and jumping. This was always a concern, and also one that was brought up again and again by certain people. And I guess it still works. I mean, people who don't like turn-based combat in general, yeah, they will not like this game, but yeah. It seems there are enough people that are interested in this combination.
Right, and I love how the Metroidvania component is not just only the look of it and the format of, you know, there's a map that you can slowly fill up and explore. There's abilities that you can only use with certain creatures that can unlock certain paths. So as you tame more monsters and get them on your team, you can see what abilities they have. Like, okay, the wolf can slash through a rock. So if I don't have that one, I can't go to this secret area. So that's pretty clever too in the gameplay.
Yeah, that's also like one of the main ideas of the game, that instead of collecting power-ups for the protagonist, which you also do, but yeah, mostly you use your monsters to access new areas.
And there's a skill tree, which I love for the monsters. Yes. So let's get into that. Talk about the core gameplay loop and what the creature evolution and their skills look like from the gameplay perspective.
Yeah, I think gameplay-wise, what is also a bit different compared to other monster taming games is, yeah, that you are able to customize your monsters a lot. Like, you have a unique skill tree for every single monster with a lot of active and passive abilities. You can put equipment on the monsters, so you can come up with a lot of really synergetic combinations of monsters and skills, and that gives the game like a really strategic depth, but also increases the complexity and the difficulty of the game. One complaint I had with the Pokemon games, for example, that they felt too easy for me.
For a lot of players, a huge complaint.
Yeah. Yes. And I wanted to make it like more strategic, more customizable.
Right, because if you look at Pokemon, I think, you know, as we got older playing those games, it feels like the strategy has all but disappeared to a certain point. I mean, it's like, yeah, once you find like that one powerful monster, you can just mash that one attack, and it's like, well, screw weaknesses or what's most effective. I feel like you can one-shot anything at a certain point, but as you go through your creatures and you're seeing like the full skill tree set, I did want to ask you, can you max out the skill tree for each creature, or is it just that you have to pick and choose the skills you want? I'm not that far along yet, like to know like the max level per creature, but can you fill up the whole skill tree, or is it just pick wisely as you level up your monsters?
No, you can't fill the whole skill tree. You will always have to make choices. So even at level 40, I think it would be a bit boring if you had all the skills. Then
because
the strategy will be gone for the
right monsters. Right, well, I think what I would do is I would just capture more than one of the same monster and just have different build outs for them.
Yeah you can do that, and also there are skill resetters that you get plenty of, so you can always try around.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. Also, there's a feature that not all notice, but you're actually able to save team compositions, and this will also save their skill tree. So you can, for example, save one team, reset all their skills, try something different, and save it as a different team, and then you can load between those two teams, and it will load all the skills and all the equipment the monsters had, so you can try around and go back to your previous teams, for example.
How does an indie game with one person developing it show more innovation than Pokemon in its last few games? Because what you're saying is like, would be a wet dream for so many like Pokemon fans to have like that level of depth and strategy. And here you are, like, this, there's, you can improve on so much. How do you do it?
Yeah, for us, I have to say, I didn't end up developing it alone.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, on the onset.
Yeah, it started out as a one-man project, but yeah, like my brother joined pretty early on. He already contributed ideas, the text for the story to the game, and once we had this successful Kickstarter, which was after 3 years of free time development, he joined working on it part time. he was still studying, so he was working part-time on the project. And also we had some more freelancers join, help us with some pixel art, some music. And we also had a publisher, Team 17, who joined.
Yes.
They helped with QA, marketing, and bringing the game to the consoles.
Right. I mean, like, listen, like,
yeah, but yeah,
you're nowhere near like a Pokemon level team.
Yes, yes. Yeah, there's I think on one hand, I can understand the Pokemon, the way they do the games. I mean, they take the safe road that already. Mm-hmm. They don't want to experiment too much, like never break. How was it?
If it's not broken, don't fix it. Is that what the?
Yeah.
True. Yeah, yeah, but
I mean, they do innovate a little bit here and there, mm-hmm. and yeah, and I guess they want to keep it simple to make it accessible to as large audience as possible. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
right. But the problem there is like you can make it so simple. It's like, is this even fun anymore? What I'm playing?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think if they made it a bit more challenging, a bit mm-hmm. more strategic, I think it would still be accessible to all this audience.
Yeah, I mean, listen, kids are more savvy than we give them credit for, I think, more than ever.
Yeah.
So I think at a young age, let's challenge their brains a little bit with more complex ideas and strategy in the Pokemon game. It's not a huge change. Just I think if they just tried harder, it would go a long way. Now, you mentioned a little while ago Team 17 joining as a publisher. Now, when I see that logo, I think of Overcooked immediately. When did they join on, and how was that conversation? Like, did they see your game and thought, we want this in our catalog to publish? What was that conversation like between you and Team 17?
Yeah, I think actually many also know them for the Worms games.
Oh, yes, and the Worms games, yes, of course.
Yeah, because I also actually just when they contacted us, I was like, oh, those were the people who made the Worms games that I played in the 90s. And they are actually publishing indie games now, okay. And yeah, it was during the Kickstarter they contacted us. At that point, we were undecided if we want to self-publish or mm-hmm. like have a publisher join us, because if you do it yourself, you keep all the income. Mm-hmm. You go with a publisher, you have to split. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the main draw was that we could focus more on just developing the game and not selling the game, marketing the
right.
game.
Right, that's a huge part of it too.
And also that porting to consoles, that was an area that I was not so much experienced in. I programmed for the original Wii at a previous company, but yeah, it was quite some years ago, and yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a big catch, because you feel like, do I keep my project independent from other influences, like a publisher who may say, you know what, you want to help back your game, we'll give you additional financing, we'll do all the marketing and PR work, but can you just change X, Y, and Z about your game?
Yeah, that was actually also one point why we agreed with Team 17, because they promised us that we will always have the last word on things, yeah. On the design. Design-wise, they would not force us to change the game in a way that we don't want the game to be. And also they allowed us to keep the IP of the game, because they told me they had like this experience themselves when they used to be just a developer, and they had publishers they worked themselves with, and they told me that they often comment these issues that the publishers owned their Worms IP, and they were the deciding factor. And I think in the 80s they bought the IP and just said, okay, we will publish our games ourselves now. We don't want it. That's what they do with the games they publish. They don't take the IP. They let the indie developers keep it. And this is actually, that's quite some indie publishers do nowadays.
Yeah, I feel like that's more prevalent now because things are so much more transparent. And to have a publisher come in and say, we want you to change your game, there's no way that's going to be kept secret. Like, someone's going to be like, hey, so-and-so is demanding these huge changes. We don't like it. You know, what should we do? But it's nice to hear that you have what was once an indie developer of games, like, you know, come back. They bought their IPs back and now they're publishing. They understand how your side of the world works. And they don't want to have what happened to them happen to you or others that they publish for, which is nice.
Yes. And also they were like quite trustworthy for me because they are quite a big publisher for an indie publisher.
They are. Mm-hmm. Award-winning according to their website.
Yeah. Because you have a lot of small indie publishers that are often a bit shady to me. I, as a developer, would not be sure, okay, will they do actually a lot for you or will they just take a part of the income and not do much? That's what I'm sometimes scared.
Have you experienced that before? Like before Team 17 reached out, were there others who, you don't have to name names, but did someone reach out? You're like, you don't smell right to me. Something is wrong here.
I mean, I didn't experience it myself, but yeah, I read it on the developer community.
Right. And I'm sure you've heard stories as a developer, yes, like from other indie devs, like what they've gone through.
Exactly.
Yeah. So your Kickstarter campaign, you guys launched that about 3 years ago. Maybe 5 years ago. I forget the exact date. 3 years ago? Well, 2 years ago. 2018. Yeah, 2018. Yes. 2018. Because you guys were developing in 2015 and then you went to Kickstarter 3 years after that. So you guys launched with, you know, a fairly modest goal about, I think it was 25,000 US dollars. 20,000 euro, and then you get a huge response, like over $120,000 in funding.
Yes.
What was that like for you, seeing like this little side gig you're working on in your free time, and now you're like, if I put it on Kickstarter, I have to finish it now, and you're seeing the money pouring in and people like really responding to this project. What was that like for you initially?
Oh yeah, that was really awesome. It was like relief because when I planned to start the Kickstarter, I quit my previous job that I was working on. It was a game programmer job at a middle-sized company. It was actually working on Tropico 6 that was released, I think, in 2019.
Right.
Yes. I was quite confident that Kickstarter would be somewhat successful. So I kept this pledge amount that we needed for the Kickstarter to succeed low. That I would be rather confident that we would reach that amount. But yeah, it was still a bit scary, like quitting the job and going for the Kickstarter. But yeah, I posted about the game like for quite some time before the Kickstarter online. I had published a free demo and I had like a lot of positive response and quite some threads I posted went viral. And that gave me the confidence that I'm onto something. That people
I'm not crazy. Enjoy. This is gonna work.
Yes, yes. But yeah, I didn't expect that the Kickstarter would be that successful.
Yeah, I mean, I am a proud backer of your game. I mean, when I saw it for the first time, I think I found it on Reddit, just scrolling through some random threads. I was like, this looks neat. And then I saw the actual gameplay footage and I was like, this looks really up my alley. It's like, it takes my favorite things, Metroidvania's pixel art and like Pokemon type gameplay. And it's a beautiful combination of the two genres. And I'm the kind of backer who I'll support you, and then I kind of tune out because I back way too many projects on Kickstarter. I feel like it's a disease now with me. I have like, I think 20 on my list, I think, maybe more than that. Because like, I'm a sucker for pixel art, and if it looks decent enough, I will throw money at it all the time. So it was really nice for me after backing your game 2 years ago and then playing it now for the first time on its release. It looked so much better, like the polish of the sprites, like the main character design looked much more cleaned up. And it's like watching it come a long way over the course of 2 years, it's really rewarding. And I feel like as you, the developer, you must feel that same way, like seeing your little project that you thought, okay, it's on the side to side thing, I'm making, you know, AAA games in the meantime. And now it's like you have your own game, which is amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And also, thanks a lot for putting your trust into us.
Of course.
And Ultimania Asa indie developers. Yeah, it's definitely amazing. And we improved a lot on the quality of some of the sprites, the music. Mm-hmm. I'm really happy. And
what was that journey for you like when you were working, you know, on games like Tropico 6 and other like big AAA franchises? Like, when did you say to yourself, I want to leave this and do my own thing as a game developer? When did that click for you in your head? At what point did you say, you know what, I've done this for a while, for like a long time, now it's time to like see what I can do on my own?
I didn't have this goal actually that I want to do it. I mean, it was always like a thought I played with, like, yeah, it would be awesome to develop my own games. But at the same time, I was like, I'm pretty involved into this indie developer communities. And I knew that the real world is that most of the indie developers, they are not successful enough to earn a living. Like, mm-hmm. there are so many indie developers out there, and most of the indie games don't make enough money for the developers make a living out of it. Like 90% or something probably don't earn enough. And then you have 9% that of developers who can make a living out of it, and then you have this 1% that get filthy rich. that's like it's similar like with other form of arts like music, mm-hmm. film. You have a lot of like hobby or like semi-professional people who can do good music, good games, but mm-hmm. it's barely not good enough to make enough money to live out from it.
Right. And so, it's not so much even to the quality of what the game is like or the music or the film. It's just there's so much noise to cut through. Like, you go on Steam, there's just so many games being released every single day, and I'm caught off guard by how many quality games like I discover randomly just on a thread or like in a tweet somewhere. And I wonder, why isn't this getting more of a spotlight? Because there's so much of it. It's yes. like the saturation levels. And to see your game, which it's getting really great feedback on Steam. Like my first thought is always like, all right, go to Steam, check the reviews. Are the numbers high? And I'm like, this game deserves like a million reviews because it's so good. And you guys are getting decent views, which is great. But I've seen games like Crash Emerald, which it's heartbreaking for quality games sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a really hard market, hard fought market. And yeah, to come to your previous question, it was always like a dream scenario that I could work on a game on of my own, but I was more like pessimistic or realistic that this is quite difficult and unlikely to happen. So when I started the project, it was more really like a hobby project. I just wanted to finish the game. Mm-hmm. And yeah, when I first started to post about it online, it was what you say, what I noticed. I started to be active on Twitter and retweeting other developers. And I was like seeing so many indie developers who had such good games out there. It was crazy. And but I the more time passed, I realized that I have quite an unique idea that I can make it despite this fierce competition.
Right. What was the biggest thing you learned this experience for you going like as an indie dev for the first time and releasing your first game?
Oh yeah, I learned quite a lot. Like I was really good at programming. I worked like as a programmer for 8 years, and this was always the skill I was best in. But yeah, my other skills like pixel art were not that great. I learned a lot in the first years. I like tried to improve on this skill a lot. Also making music, I had barely any experience in making music. That's also was an area I learned a lot. Marketing the game, yeah, also was completely new to me. Twitter, Facebook, all the social media, all the platforms. Yeah, that's, I learned a lot of new skills basically, yes.
So it sounds now like you're better equipped for what comes in the future for Morai game. So what does that look like for you? Are you planning your next game, or are you just going to sit back and let Sanctuary do its thing for a while? Are you going to add to it as time goes on? What's the future look like for you and your team?
Oh, well, yeah, we definitely will add some more stuff to Monster Sanctuary. We will release updates with balancing changes, also new features. There are still a couple features that we promised in the Kickstarter that didn't make into the final game yet, like New Game Plus, player customization, for example. And yeah, we will add these updates over time, do balancing changes depending on the player feedback. That's something that worked out really great during the early access phase. Like we adjusted a lot the balancing based on the player feedback. And yeah, maybe depending how successful the game will be in the end, and this is also something we will talk with the publisher, there is a possibility that maybe we'll do a bigger update, something like a DLC.
Ooh.
With maybe new area, new monsters. This is a possibility, but yeah, it's nothing that we can confirm or promise yet. But otherwise, we do have also our projects already in mind. There was for some time we were thinking about making a sequel right away, but right now we are heading in a slightly different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely it would be another monster taming game. But it would be not Monster Sanctuary 2.
Interesting. So I was going to ask you, do you see yourselves doing just a sequel just to improve on this same sort of format and gameplay style? Or do you see yourselves combining two other different genres together? But it sounds like you're aiming for another taming game, but not exactly what this game looks like.
Yes, it will be not the same combination, but it will be again a combination that is quite unique still, but yeah, maybe not quite as innovative as Monster Sanctuary. But yeah, overall, I think the monster taming genre is a bit, it's not as populated as other genres. Like, most of the other genres are like really overcrowded, especially in the indie market.
Right.
Many developers go on and just copy their favorite genre and make like a new game. And I think the monster taming genre, it's not as bad. I think that's also a part why Monster Sanctuary was successful. And that was interesting for me, especially 5 years back. I thought Pokemon is like one of the most popular brands there is. And why are there not more monster taming games?
Right. And I think that's why you got the huge response, because like I can, looking back at my Kickstarter history, I've backed dozens of games, but only three of them are taming games. I have your game, Temtem, and Monster Crown. That's it.
Yes.
And the rest are all just side-scrolling 2D platformers.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good point. I feel like given, it's hard to get that genre right. It's a lot of work, because doing a platformer, it's okay. I go side to side. I get some weapons. I get some. I know I'm like super dumbing it down. It's not that simple. But when you're talking about a taming game, it's, you're talking about attacks, balancing. There's a lot of stuff involved in that compared to a simple side-scrolling platformer game. So I can see why a lot of folks, while they love the genre, they might be reluctant to tackle it on their own as an indie project. And I thank you for doing it, because it is a lot of work, but it paid off, apparently.
Yeah, but it's actually, if you compare it maybe to RPGs, you have similar mechanics.
Sure.
So I don't think it should not be too much of like work, and it did become better in the 5 years since we started. Yeah, like you mentioned, there was Temtem, Monster Crown. There are a couple more like Nexomon, and yeah, some more and monster taming games. But yeah, I think it's still a market that is not all too crowded, or a genre that is not all too crowded compared to other genres. And also, I mean, there always was a scene of making monster taming games, but it was mostly like mods to Pokemon, or
right,
very Pokemon similar, Pokemon-like games that were barely legal, like in this gray area.
Yeah, right. And I've seen tons of Pokemon like fan games too, that just, they take the assets and just, they make their own, and then they get shut down by Nintendo.
Yes. Yeah, it felt like they focused on making very Pokemon similar games, or just making like mods.
Right. You know, that could be a part of it too. As a developer, you're thinking, I can make a Pokemon like game, but will it be taken as seriously as Pokemon itself? It's also a challenge. Like, who will look at this and say, well, I have Pokemon, why do I want to play Temtem? But Temtem, if you play it, it does so many things better than Pokemon does. And when I play your game, again, the same rules apply, better than what Pokemon does. So there's room for improvement. I think people should see that there's potential in this genre. And if they do it well enough, it's going to get a huge, huge response. All right, I want to ask you a question before we dive into rapid fire. I think it's a good segue. If you were to take two other genres of your choosing and combine them into a game, which ones would they be?
Well, that's a quite difficult question, because that's basically what you have to think about. I think I cannot really answer this that easily.
Or give me two that you think would never work together.
Okay, I let's go
like a fighting game cooking sim.
Yes. Yeah, I think there were some combinations in the past that Sounded interesting, but didn't work out. Like, for example, something that was tried a couple times, combining RTS games and first person games. Like, some people are playing first person, and there is one person that controls them top down.
Yeah,
This is something
no.
I tried a couple of times, but never worked. So it's more difficult to make a combination of genres that actually makes sense and that doesn't exist yet.
Right.
Yes.
That's I'm already feeling sick about that. Feeling an FPS that's also an RTS, or like,
Yes.
no, that sounds weird to me. I don't like it. All right, it is now time to properly get into the rapid fire portion of the interview. This is where we learn a little bit more about you, Dennis, what your innermost thoughts are like, your deep personality, stuff like that. So the first question I want to ask you that we ask of all guests, and that is, pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No.
Very fast. I love it. Love it. If you had a song play every time you walked into a room, which song would that be?
That's a weird one. I think I have to skip on that one. I have really no idea.
All right, we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that. Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Flight, definitely.
What adjective best describes you when you're drunk?
Funny.
What subject can you talk about for hours?
Yeah, game development or games.
Is it okay to sleep with socks on?
It's okay, but I don't do it.
There was like fall off anyway when you're sleeping. I feel like one's always missing when I wake up sometimes. So why
Okay.
bother? Why bother? What is the dumbest way you've ever injured yourself?
How it's not like really dumb, but like how do you say it in English when you like step on your feet in the wrong way and you stretch like this? Not the muscle, but this I don't know what the word is. Sorry.
Is it like when you miss a step, like as you're walking, like?
Yeah, like court.
Sure.
Yeah, if you like stretch your quad when you do a wrong step, that's like that hurts like a lot, and yeah, that is somewhat damp, I guess. I can't really think of any, at least I don't remember anything else right now.
What do you think people notice most about you?
I'm not sure. I'm not like I'm rather shy person, so I don't know what be really noticeable about me.
Would you rather eat a sandwich made from four ingredients chosen at random from inside your refrigerator, or have your friends make a sandwich for you and they can put anything they want in the sandwich?
I think the first option sounds more safe.
Is it more preferable to be nice or to be fair?
Both. But yeah, I guess fair is maybe more important.
Is cereal a soup?
Cereal.
Is it a soup?
What?
Oh,
Sorry.
you said cereal. Like it's cereal. It's not soup,
Yes,
it's just cereal.
yes, yes.
What's the most ridiculous thing someone tricked you into doing or believing?
Wow, these questions are really difficult. yeah.
Was it doing this podcast? Was that the most ridiculous thing?
No, I
tricked you into doing.
No, definitely not. Yeah, I can't really think of something right away.
All right. Would you rather invent something new or discover something new?
I would rather invent something new.
Mm-hmm. And you have. You really have. Who is your favorite cartoon character and why?
Some Goku, I'd say.
Okay. All right. If you had the power to shrink anything you want and take it with you, what would it be?
Maybe my computer, but yeah, not sure. I mean, you can have laptops and the likes, yeah.
Right,
so.
Right. What was your last thought before going to bed last night?
I was thinking a lot about Ulti release still. It's like going through my mind because it's still so recent. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you could have one Pokemon do a cameo in your game, which one would it be?
Probably Blastoise.
Wow, okay. Any particular any reason why?
Well, I chose Shiggy in the very first Pokemon game that was blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked it. I didn't play that many Pokemon games actually. I played the very first Pokemon games, and then I was in an age where I felt like, okay, I'm now too old for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't play until Pokemon Sun. And when I played that, I felt like, wow, this game is really easy. I could not finish it because it was too little challenge for me.
And you became that disinterested, yes. In it. It's like, this yes. is, I can't anymore.
Yeah. Also, I played some Pokemon Go when the hype started. Yeah.
Right, right.
But that was basically it.
Man, I remember when that game first came. Like, I still play it today, but when I watch all my office, my coworkers playing it, who don't play games at all, that first week they were obsessed, and then it was gone.
Yes.
Like, it was like, you're still playing that shit? It's like, you were just playing it a second ago, like, in the meetings. You would leave a meeting to go catch a Pikachu. Don't act like you weren't playing the game. But I did give you credit for not saying Pikachu as your choice, because that's, I feel like a lot of folks say, oh, Pikachu, yeah, put him in my game, fuck it.
I never liked him that much. Actually, well, also, some other Pokemons I liked was, it's the German names. Maybe I think it's Zapdos in German. Is it the
oh, bird? The Zapdos. Yeah, is that the legendary electric bird?
Yes.
Yes.
And also the electric evolution of Evoli.
The name is totally Jolteon.
Yes.
Yes.
I know that the German name was different. But
right.
Yeah,
that's actually, when you mentioned Zapdos, it brings up a very personal story to me. When I was playing Pokemon Yellow when I was a kid, I had just caught Zapdos. And it was my first one that I caught of the three legendary birds. And I felt so accomplished. I put the game down for a day, went back the next day, and my save file was gone.
What?
Like, I'm not sure what happened, but my Game Boy like erased it somehow, and I was so heartbroken, Dennis. I would say for maybe 15 years or 20 years, I did not play another Pokemon game until recently.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I was so hurt by that, because I worked hard on that save file, and I was just, man, so much work. All right. Let's wrap this up with one final question. Would you rather have one real get out of jail free card or a key that opens any door in the world?
A lucky, I'd say.
All right. All right.
I'm not interested in golf too much.
I mean, there's no like crime you want to commit that you want to get away with.
Maybe to jail. Cut is more safe.
I'm
not the guy to commit crimes, but
right.
You never know. You can go to jail for crazy things.
Sometimes. Right. You could be the fall guy for a crime. Like have a crime happen, you're the fall guy, then use that one card to get out of jail. Just get the benefits from it. But you know, you might get framed because on our last interview, our guest was saying how one of his close friends was actually put in jail for a crime they didn't commit, and they were there for like a very long time before they got released. So I'm like,
oh really?
That's crazy. Yeah. So maybe have that just in case you have enemies out there who want to frame you for murder. As a safety net. All right. This has been fantastic, Dennis. Before we sign off and say our goodbyes, where can the audience find you? Find Monster Sanctuary. Give us all the Twitter, social media stuff, plugs. This is your space to promote your game. Go for it. Where can we find you?
Yeah, first off, thanks a lot. It was a lot of fun. And yeah, I'd say people could just Google for Monster Sanctuary and then they should find Steam page and their or our page. And usually we have all the links there for Twitter. Yeah, I post on Twitter a lot about the development of the game. And also we have a very active Discord. That's where actually our biggest community is in. I'm also active in there. So people interested into the game can either join the Discord or the Twitter. Just Google for Monster Sanctuary Twitter or Monster Sanctuary Discord. Yeah.
Right. And it's out now for PlayStation 4, Xbox, Steam, and Switch, correct? It's on all the platforms?
Yes.
Awesome. And yes, listeners, please buy this game and support it. It is amazing. It has the Andy stamp of approval. I guarantee you'll enjoy it. So take a break from Cyberpunk and play a bug-free game. So with that, we're at the end of the show now. It's been fantastic. And a lot like Mass Effect, my co-host Steven will return at some point on the interview show. I guarantee it. Now, I will not steal his sign-off this week. I think I'm going to do my own going forward for the solo interview. So I'm going to say this very plainly, that life is too short to be serious. So laugh at yourself. And if you can't laugh at yourself, email me at andy@ndspodcast.com and I will laugh at you. And with that, that's the end of the show. Thank you, listeners. Until next time.